This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
I'm back, baby. That's right. I'm washing my hair again. But not washing my hair with just anything. There's only one product I will put in my hair, and it's made by Modern Mammals. Head over to modernmammals.com/pages/LSS for 10% off with promo code LSS. For a long time, I completely swore off shampoo. It leaves your hair dry, overly fluffy, unmanageable, and just not looking great. There's a bunch of leftover residue in that stuff too, and it just robs your hair of its natural oils and throws off the pH balance. Modern Mammals just doesn't do that. My hair feels brand new every time I use it, and it's been a complete game changer for me. But you know what? Don't just take my word for it either. Head over to their website, read the reviews. This stuff really is awesome. You're going to feel the difference, and people are going to notice the difference as well. So head over to modernmammals.com/pages/LSS and use code LSS for 10% off. Again, that's modernmammals.com for 10% off with promo code LSS. Don't forget to use that promo code LSS so they know I sent you. And remember, supporting our sponsors is supporting me. I didn't see you there. Welcome to another episode of Lead Singer Syndrome. I'm Shane Told, your host on a podcast where I talk to other lead singers. Today we have a great show. Chris from Motionless in White is here. Chris Motionless himself, big hockey fan, big sports guy. Did you know that? I bet you didn't even know that. He says he doesn't talk about that. So it's a great episode. So happy to have him. We conducted this conversation in the back of his bus on Warped Tour in San Diego. Great times and really a good dude. And I really learned a lot about him. And I didn't know, you know, he was such a big fan of, you know, early 2000s music, including my band. So it was a flattering conversation and really enjoyed it. Before we jump in, as always, I want to say you can get in touch. It's real easy. Email leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com. We got an Instagram page at leadsingersyndrome. We got Twitter at leadsingersyn, S-Y-N. Also, Snapchat. It's Real Shane Told. We don't have a Lead Singer Syndrome one, so just using my personal one. But feel free to send me snaps of you listening to the show. We've been doing that the last couple weeks. I've really been enjoying it, and I'm actually half decent at replying to those. So keep that up. Keep it up on the Snapchat. I usually add everybody back, too, so I can look at your stories and creep on you. So, yeah, check all that out. Again, it's Real Shane Told. Right now, I am in Australia. I am in a hotel room in Melbourne. Melbourne, man, this city rips. Like, I love this city so much. It actually reminds me a lot of Chicago, which, I don't know, it's just got, the way it's built is kind of like that. And right now, it's actually kind of cold outside, which you don't think of Australia as being cold, but it's their winter time. And I'm just having a blast here with some good friends, Pierce the Veil. Beartooth, that's the tour over here we're doing right now. It's awesome. I guess by the time this is out, we'll already be gone from Australia and we'll be on the way to Hawaii. I know, poor us. But if you're a listener in Hawaii, make sure you come out to our show with Silverstein and Beartooth. Silvertooth what? And we'll see you there in Hawaii. And of course, you guys always ask, how can I support the show, Shane? Well, it's really, really, really easy. The first thing you can do is tell your friends, please. If you have any friends that are into music, doesn't matter what kind of music, please let them know about this podcast. Go to their phone, take their phone out of their hand, and go into the app, the podcast app that's on every iPhone or whatever. Subscribe to the podcast, get them into it. That's really what it's all about, to grow this thing. The sky's the limit. I'm really feeling good about it. We just had episode 40, and it's just been so much fun for me, and I really, really enjoy bringing these podcasts to you. I'll keep the intro short and sweet this week, so let's just jump into it with my new buddy, Chris of Motionless in White.
Rolling from hell, falling from grace.
I am here with Chris. Chris Motionless.
Warped Tour.
In white. Warped Tour. San Diego, California. Not too hot today.
I was going to say, today's the first day that we can't really focus on the weather being a thing, because it's the nicest day in a while.
It's getting a bit hot out there, I will say, but...
And here we are focusing on the weather. Well, I don't know anyone... It seems to be like the... It's obviously the easiest thing for anyone to go up to another person and talk about, but I feel like it's... Everybody I've come in contact with so far on Warped Tour, the first thing we always talk about is the weather. It's kind of...
Yeah, but like, you know what? It affects everybody on this shit. Like, it'd be one thing... It's one thing, like, you talk about the weather with someone, like, at work, when you're like, we're sitting inside together for 9 hours.
Yes.
Weather's not really a factor.
Yeah.
And we're going to leave, and it's going to be, like, dark outside. Like, okay, that's just talking about the weather for the sake of making conversation.
Yeah.
But out here, literally the weather is, like, everything. If it rains, the day's fucked.
Yep.
I guess.
You.
How has it been? Has there been a lot of rain this year?
No, it's pisses me off because last week, the whole last week before we had our most recent off day, every single day it looked like it was on the verge of like just downpour, and it never rained. And then we finally had a day off, poured the whole day. I was like,
man.
Fuck you, man. But fortunately, at least it cools it off when the shade comes in and like the storm is looking like it's going to happen. It hasn't rained much, though. It did in the first couple days, and that's it.
Dude, I'll never forget, man. Like, people can say what they want about Kevin Lyman, but I'll tell you, I've always respected the guy immensely, but one time, it was 2013, we were on the Monster Stage, and the Monster Stage, it's different now, but they used to have this kind of, like, strange sort of inflatable roof.
Yeah, the balloon thing.
Yeah. So it rained so much. I think we were in Florida. That's a good guess. It rained so much that the stage basically just collapsed. And there was so much water that, like, there was a drain, like a sewage drain, kind of right where the kids stood.
Ugh.
And it got overflowed. So basically, it was just full-on shit coming up from there, right? Guess who's out there literally shoveling shit out of the way to
Kevin
keep
Lyman.
The show going? Kevin fucking Lyman.
Yeah, man. He's...
That's like... He's...
He definitely is no rock star in the sense that he's not like too good to come out here and do anything that anyone else would as long... He's always about being at the forefront of helping anyone, clearing up a situation. Like, he's not like too cool for any of that shit.
Nope.
He takes control and takes the reins, and it's awesome.
22 years... I think it's 22 years now they've been doing this thing, and like, I'll tell you, I walked in today, the first person I saw was Kevin Lyman on a bicycle on his radio, like, putting out a fire, you know? Like, to be the founder of Warped Tour and everything, and still, like, 22 years later, having that drive, it's pretty special. If I was him, I'd probably be home just, like, doing it from my computer in my office. I don't think I'd have the passion he does.
Yeah.
You know?
I often wonder, like, what would happen if he didn't do Warped Tour 1 year? Like, I think with how much he's done, he'd go fucking insane. Like, he would just lose his mind if he didn't have that to do in the summer.
Maybe.
You would think, oh, like, he'd love the time off, but then, like, I don't know, workaholics and people who have that much of a influence on something like this, I wonder if he'd go crazy.
Well, I mean, it's got to be a 12-month-a-year job, right? Like, so he probably the second they, you know, pack up the cases and the tents, you know, at the end of the tour, probably literally, like, the next day, he's thinking about the next year and what bands he's going to get and all that shit. Yeah. So maybe by the time you have that buildup of all the work you do putting it in, then maybe finally, like, when it's time, he's excited and he just wants to get back out there, right? So it makes sense.
Either way, thank you, Kevin Lyman, for 22 years of this. Yeah.
So I got to ask you, first off, there's kind of one amazing thing about your band is that you guys are able to play Warped Tour. You're also able to play, like, Mayhem Festival. You're able to tour with, like, A Day to Remember. And you're able to tour with, like, Slipknot and Lamb of God. That is so rare. I was talking to somebody, and I was like, what bands can do that? And literally, I think your band is the only one we could come up with.
Huh.
Have you thought about that?
I mean, it's not something I sit around and be like, well, you know, I can... Like, it's definitely, at this point, a thing where it just happened, and I try to think back, I'm like, well, what bands have been able to do this? And I think when I could look back I know bands like, you know, bands that we love, like Bleeding Through, have torn Warped Tour, but then they've toured with bands like him or Cradle of Filth.
It's a pretty good example.
So, you know, and they're a pretty massive influential band for us, or bands like 18 Visions. They did tours like that. But as of right now, I guess there's not really a whole lot. Avenged is probably the last band I could think of that's done the both worlds of stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, to see that in the sense that we idolize, those bands are major influences for us. So to see that we're doing something that we enjoyed that they did is rewarding in that sense. But it's interesting because I always wonder on the other side of that, like let's say one of our songs comes up on Pandora Radio when someone's listening to like the Falling in Reverse channel. I wonder what song comes up. And is it one of the ones that's more fitting for like the Slipknot Lamb of God crowd? So I always wonder like, what's it like when that happens? What do the Falling Reverse kids think when it's a different type of song? And then I'm like, well, is that cool that we have that wide of a variety of music, or should we chill out and kind of hone it down to one? So it's concepts like that, like what you brought up, make me think about what we do musically as a band, and I'm very happy for that. And I'm also kind of like, I stress out a little bit over it. So it's a bit of both, but I'm just happy that we're able to do what we want to do and do these cool tours.
I think it's amazing. I mean, the fact that you guys are able to do that, and like, you know, even like you have the AP Love, you know, like even that magazine, which typically doesn't, I guess they kind of do support some of the like the Marilyn Manson, and they do cover that stuff. But even that, like you have, so it's really, really cool how you guys are able to sort of navigate in both worlds, which is rare. And do you prefer a certain dynamic over the other?
I mean, not so much in the show. Like when we play shows, I love any amount of them. Like it was a lot harder to do the Slipknot Lamb of God crowd last summer. I mean, we were opening the tour, so no one gives a shit about the opener. They're just there to see.
In that world, it's harder, sure.
But yeah. I enjoy that challenge, and I feel like when the people in that world get really excited about a band, they stick around a little bit more than, let's say, you know, I've seen firsthand that a lot of like the Warped, not a lot, but a considerable amount of the Warped Tour crowd kind of just comes and goes with what they like at the moment, and they move on to the next thing and the next thing. And we are fortunate in that sense to have a lot of diehard fans that have stuck with us for years and years and years. So it's tough to pick. This crowd is, I think, the ones that are a little bit more passionate about the band. They're the more like diehard core fans of the band. But I really do enjoy the challenge of trying to get that like Slipknot crowd on board with us, or the Mayhem crowd on board, because, you know, that's a whole other world that I feel like we want to impress people in. And so
absolutely. Well, it can be hard. I mean, like when you're able to chameleon your way into both worlds, you sometimes just don't fit, like feel like you fit in at all, right? Because you're not quite a punk band, you're not quite a metal band, you're not quite like goth enough, but you know, but you're too goth. Like it's a hard thing to navigate. So it's just something that right away strikes me about your band as being interesting and being, you know, good. But I mean, it's even fuck my band. Like, we don't know where we stand. Like, we're way too soft to tour with metal bands, way too heavy to tour with pop punk bands. For us, it's the same problem.
Yeah, I've seen you guys do some pretty varied tours as well over the years.
That's true.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, but I mean, let's face it, we're not going performing on like a Slipknot tour.
You're not going on tour with Rob Zombie anytime soon. Huh?
Oh man, I would love to see Rob Zombie every night. Man, that's the best. So, man, let's go back. Let's start at the beginning. First time on the show. It's funny. I got in touch with you through our mutual friend Matt Steele.
Correct. Shout out to Matt Steele.
Big shout out to Matt Steele. I know he's listening. Do you went to high school with Matt? Is that right?
No, Matt and I met like kind of. He's from New Jersey. I'm from Pennsylvania. So just through shows over the years, and he mutual friends with other people. It's kind of just one of those situations.
Okay, cool. For some reason, I thought you guys went to high school together.
I don't
know where I got this misinformation. And then when I was like looking it up, I was like, wait, he's from Scranton? Like, I thought he was from New York. Because you're a Rangers fan, right?
Matt's a Rangers fan.
You're not a Rangers fan?
No. I'm a Lightning fan.
I know you're a hockey fan.
Yes.
Lightning fan. I knew that. He told me that.
Yeah, Matt is a diehard Rangers fan.
No, I know he is.
Yeah.
And I'll be honest. Well, I'll tell you I'm a diehard Leafs fan, because I've been a Leafs fan my whole life. But we're talking hockey, by the way, people. So get with the program. Go on ESPN.com so you know the names of the teams. No, I'm a diehard Leafs fan. I'm from Toronto, grew up in Canada, obviously. So, but man, they're such a bad team, and they've been so bad for so long.
I know that, there was much talk of Steven Stamkos possibly leaving Tampa to go to Toronto, but
well, he's from Toronto, so yep. We would have taken him, sure. But I'll tell you, man, now, and I want to know your opinion. I'm pretty ready for the Las Vegas Blanks.
I like that.
I don't know what to call them. Yeah, I'm calling them the Las Vegas Blanks. The Las Vegas Blanks to come in the league and shake things up. And I think I'm going to be the biggest Las Vegas fan.
Really?
Well, my sister lives there.
Okay.
So I spend a lot of time there. Like, I spend every Christmas there and shit like that. So I'm excited. I think it's good for sports. I think it's great for the city of Las Vegas.
I agree.
What's your thoughts on it?
Well, I mean, I think it's a side note to that. I believe I read something about, you know, Quebec City applying for another team.
Yeah.
Again, which I don't know if they'd go with the Nordiques again or if they just come up with a new team, but
yeah, it probably depends on like the licensing or some shit like that.
I was very surprised to hear that a Canadian city was denied a team, but yet Las Vegas was approved. That was very bizarre to me, and I feel like Canadian fans are very, very upset about that. So
yeah, I mean, they're diehards in Quebec, but you know, it's funny. A lot of people don't know this about. You know, there used to be all those Canadian teams. Like, there used to be the Jets, and there's the Jets again, right?
Yep.
And the Nordiques. And the reason that those teams folded, and the same in the NBA, like the Vancouver Grizzlies folded too, and the Montreal Expos for that matter, the reason was because the Canadian dollar, the currency, fell so low that every time these Canadian teams made a dollar, it was only like 65, 70 cents US, and they had to pay all their players in US dollars and all this stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So they lost so much money just based on that.
Yeah.
That's the reason that the teams folded. So, like 6 months to a year ago, the Nordiques were in great shape because the dollars were on par. Now they fell again. So it's the same problem. And this is something like people don't talk about. I guess maybe Americans don't. Really, they don't really look at the conversion like we do.
We're pretty dumb, so we don't.
No, yeah, it's not dumb. Well, I mean, there's. I don't know what the polls are on Trump, but there are some dumb people in the U.S. Let's be honest. But yeah, but that's a big thing. So I think that actually is a factor of why the Nordiques or Quebec City might not get a team.
Yeah. Well, either way, the original question about Vegas, you know, I think it's pretty awesome. I don't know how the entry draft is going to affect any of our teams, but
it's weird.
Yeah, I'm excited that there's something new. Everybody likes to focus on like a new change, and even if people hate it, at least it's something cool that's happening that's new. I think it'll be great for Las Vegas. It's interesting to see that. Is that their first major sports team?
Exactly.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That hockey is like the first of a mm-hmm. city. An American city.
Especially a city that pretty much can never make ice ever.
Yeah, exactly.
So. I guess it snows sometimes. Anyone that like lives in Las Vegas knows that it does snow sometimes, but it's... I bet the temperature there right now is like 125 or something.
God. Well, Arizona does it, and we were there a couple of days ago. I don't know how they do that shit, but...
So how did you become such a... Well, a big hockey fan in general. I know you're a big hockey fan. That's why we're talking about it.
Yeah.
How did you become such a big hockey fan, and how did you become a Tampa Bay Lightning fan being from Pennsylvania?
Well, I don't really know if a lot of people know this about me because I don't really reveal like too much of my earlier life, but before music, it was sports. Like, all I cared about in my life was sports, and I was very athletic. I was like asked numerous times to be in the high school football team. I was just like, nah.
You're a big guy. I can see that.
Yeah, I'm a tall dude. So I never actually played ice hockey. I played street hockey. I played soccer. I played so many different sports for teams and just local stuff that we had going on in our neighborhood. So I've always been a big fan of all sports. The only person in my... I wasn't raised on hockey. The only person in my family that liked it was my uncle, who was a Stars fan and a Red Wings fan. So I grew up with it in my blood. Then I just kind of got over those sports altogether and went into like the X Games type of sports. As like right before music was like, I could care less about baseball, hockey, whatever. It was all just like skateboarding, riding my or BMX, all that shit. And then music came. And so it's been like phases over my life where these things have come and gone. And once music became like a career, and I wasn't moving on from it like I was with sports, and then BMX, and then to music, I kind of just went back to sports. Yeah. And it's funny, hockey was the one that got me back, that like got me initially to be interested in sports again. But now I'm slowly seeing that when there's like a baseball game on, I played baseball since I was like, I think 7 through 14. So now when there's a baseball game on, I'm like, I see that I keep watching it. I watched the NBA finals this year. So yeah. I think I just really love sports. As far as being a Tampa fan, I was not really raised on a team. If anything, I was around the Flyers a lot, which I back the Flyers.
Sure.
You know, just being around them, we're not really... We have the...
From Scranton, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of not right near anything. You're kind of close to everything, but far from everything.
Yeah, most people in our area, we have like the minor league Penguins next to where we live. But, you know, growing up, just being around more so Flyer stuff than Penguin stuff, so that's always been like the team that was I wouldn't say raised on, but come to like. But when it came time to just like reintroduce myself into the sport and pick a team, I just really liked Steven Stamkos because he was a young great super talent. But Tampa is such an underrated underdog team, and I was like fuck man, like I want to back a team that has so much great potential. Like at that time, they had Marty St. Louis and Vinny the Cavalier, and like just great players. But we're getting shit on, and nobody cared about everyone. Everyone's always like, "Oh, team from Florida, fuck that." I was like, "That's the team I want to back." So yeah, that's how I.
Yeah, no, I remember like when they won the cup. What year did they win the cup the first time?
2004.
Yeah, when they won the cup, I remember the next year. I think the opening game wasn't even sold out. You know, like, which is just, I mean, that tells you about their fan base, you know, and how hard it is in, you know, Florida to, you know, but I back the team too. And Bishop's been like a monster, you know, in the crease. So that's interesting though, that you talk about sports and kind of how you have this journey. 'Cause I'll agree with you, man. Like for me, when I was, 10, 11 years old, I started collecting baseball cards. And, you know, for me, like, I'm from Toronto, so the Blue Jays, they won the World Series in 92 and 93.
Yep.
So I was 11 and 12 years old, respectively. So that's, like, for me, that's, like, all I cared about was sports.
I'm sure it was probably a massive moment
then
for
you. Then I
your,
heard Metallica. And I was like, I heard the song One, you know, like, and I was like, what is that? I have to do that. My sister's like, I think it's guitar. I'm like, getting a guitar. You know, so that's what happened with me. And it's true. Like, I got into music. I got into punk rock and hardcore. And then I ended up exactly the same as you, sitting on a tour bus one day being like, I love baseball.
Yeah.
Why am I not watching baseball? I love baseball. And it's funny how that kind of is a thing.
I think we just... Like, we got so interested in the music that we just, like previous things, we just forget about the stuff before that. And once the music world became the job that it was for, or is for us, you settle down and start to pick back up on things that you really did like before that, you know? It's not, this does consume our lives, but at the same time, you get to a point where it's so constant that you need other stuff to really go back to and be interested in. So.
Well, I'm sure too, like, there was a point in your career early on, Chris, where, you know, you got signed,
where
right?
Where we were covering Silverstein songs? Yeah, that existed.
Oh, yeah? Which ones?
Smashing to Pieces and Giving Up.
Damn!
Yeah, way earlier on.
You're reaching for your phone like you have a recording of it.
No. Yeah, right. No, I'm trying to, I have people from...
It's fine. I would love to have witnessed that. That's funny. I didn't know that. I'm flattered.
Yeah, VFW clubs were stoked.
Damn, dude,
go ahead. Sorry.
No, that's rad. I'm beside myself. But the thing is, what I was saying, Chris, is like, you get to a point where you're a local band, you know, and you're just trying to make it. You know, you're just trying to get your name out there, you know, and then all of a sudden, you get a little bit of hope, like that you get, you know, I read a little about you guys, like you guys had a manager, you know, that got involved, and then you go around a label and you're putting out an EP, and then all of a sudden your life gets taken over by music, and you just have your, you basically just put your head down, and you have the blinders on, and all you focus on is music. And that's probably when a lot of the other things that are sort of your, you know, somewhat casual, like I'm sure, like, I mean, I probably haven't landed a kickflip since, like, Silverstein got going, you know? I'm not very good at skateboarding, but, you know, I just, like, something like that, like skateboarding, I was like, oh, I'm just, it's, I just stopped doing it. Mm-hmm. I love skateboarding. I just stopped doing it because I was so immersed in music. So, I mean, I think that that's the reason. But talk to me about when you got, when you transitioned from X Games type of shit into music, and how did you get involved with, like, playing music?
I mean, I definitely have been, I've spoken about this, seeds being planted early in my life. My grandfather was like a big country fan, always playing music. My uncle, the one that we talked about, who liked the Stars and Red Wings earlier, he was, you know, my grandfather's son. So both of them were always musical and always like playing guitar around me whenever, my grandparents were a huge part of my life when I was growing up. And so I was always around my grandfather, always acoustic guitar, playing country songs. And he always tried to get me to play. I wanted, like, no, I had no interest in it. I was just like video games, sports, didn't care about playing music. And finally, like years later, I have an uncle that also plays, a different uncle that plays guitar on my dad's side. And he was just like, hey, sit down and try this. Just randomly one day I was at his house, and he taught me that, like, Johnny Be Good riff. And I just started playing it. I don't know what happened, man. It just clicked, and I was just like, oh, I want to learn more. So I started learning anything I could just to try to teach myself or have him help, and it just, like, lit a fire inside. I know it's not this big, crazy, grandiose story, but it was just, I really do feel like I've been around it, and it was never an interest, but yet was ingrained in my development as a kid from my grandfather and my uncle, and then when a different uncle put the guitar in my hand, it just, like, finally sprouted, and boom, became what later became my life, you know?
So you started off as a guitar player.
Yep.
Did you have, when you started, you know, in your bedroom playing all these songs, did you envision yourself singing as well?
No, in fact, I personally don't see myself as a singer now. I see myself as a decent front man, but, you know, I still, you know, I could definitely be a lot better at singing. I just go up there and try to be as good as possible and do my thing, and I ended up only singing because we didn't have another singer, and we really needed somebody to, like, sing the songs we were covering, or when we were writing stuff, we were trying to write original music and there was no singer.
Yeah.
So I was just like, well, I'll sing. So I started playing guitar and singing to, like, hide behind that, because I wasn't a front man. I just wanted to be like Green Day or Blink-182, to just play the guitar and sing instead of just be the front man. But no, I never saw that, and then it just happened out of necessity, pretty much.
It's so funny, because that is on the Lead Singer Syndrome podcast, I talk to lead singers. This is like the 40th guy I've talked to. I would say most people have the same story.
Really?
It blows my mind. That's every time. Awesome. You know, people being like, and you know what, same with me, man. Like,
I was a guitar player,
and I was literally the only guy in the room that could even carry a tune, so I got stuck with it. And, like, at some point, you know, like, because that was, you know, I was in, like, a punk band before, I played guitar and sang, and at some point, I ended up in a band, Silverstein, which I wasn't playing guitar. And how did that happen with you? How did you remove the guitar, and now you're just...
I mean, we were very early on, you know, I was into the things that I was into, all the music, like, you know, AFI and the bands that we mentioned earlier, but a lot of the other guys in the band were, I was also into bands like Under Oath and Silverstein and a pretty wide range of stuff. So we all could just kind of got together and jammed out just covers of all the bands that we liked. And when it came time to write originals, it kind of got more in the direction where it was stuff kind of more like AFI or... the influence from the other guys wanting to do like Under Oath type of stuff, it went in there, and eventually over time it just got more riffier to the point where I couldn't play and sing anymore.
Oh yeah.
So we were like, okay, well, maybe we should get another guitar player and I'll just sing. And I didn't want to, but it was just to play the music that we were naturally going towards. As we progressed, it just made sense, and I just was like, all right, well, fine, I'll just sing. And I liked, at that point we were performing live and I was singing, playing guitar, and I liked singing. I liked being the front man, sort of. So I was like, all right, I'll try it. I think I could do this. And it ended up being clearly the best move that I've made in my life, to just let go of the guitar. But, you know, at least it gave me such a great understanding as to how music works. And me and our guitar player Ricky write all of our music.
Yeah, so you're
together,
still a writer. You still, like, when you guys have band practice or you're writing, you still probably have a guitar around you.
Yeah,
you're
still. It's I'm very heavily present in that world. So
it's the same as me.
Yeah. Even though I don't get to play live, we do get to be a great addition to the creation of the music based on still what we want to do with the band, and we have a good understanding of how the music's going to work because we're the vocalists now too.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's
an amazing thing though, how I think, like, even myself being, you know, in this, doing this so long, like, you know, being in a touring band for 12-13 years, I'm still surprised how many, like, lead singers are, you know, guitar players or drummers or whatever. Like, yep. I think a lot of fans that come out to shows, they see a guy up there and they're just like, oh, he's just kind of the guy running around screaming. Like, he's more like the hype man than the brains behind the music. You know, everyone always just assumes it's the guitar players that are writing it and they're kind of the masterminds.
Or in our case, the fact that we both sing and scream, so many people think that we're two different people. They're like, oh, the screamer from that band and the singer from that band. They think that shit too, and it's just like, well, you just don't know. Whatever. Yeah, I don't know if you've gotten that too.
Well, for me, I'm not going to toot my own horn or say I fucking invented anything, but I was one of the more original people that did both.
Yeah.
Because back in those days, there was almost always, like, if you think of, like, Alexa on Fire, which I know your email address is
that's so
Alexa
funny.
On Fire song. But which one is it?
44 caliber love letter. I kept,
straight from my heart.
Yeah, right. I kept that shit from back in the MySpace days because I refused to let go of it.
That's funny. Really funny. That's really funny. Yeah, we played with Alexa on Fire in a fucking barn in Uxbridge, Ontario once. God. So going way back, but no, like you know, bands like that, they had like Dallas Green, you know, singing these vocals, and then George running around screaming, like. And like Static Lullaby was like that, and I mean Under Oath was two people, and there weren't a lot of bands that were the same guy. And I honestly think that was what made Silverstein, like, in some people's opinion, like, special at the time.
Yeah,
because people were like, holy shit, it's the same guy, like, you know. And it's like, fuck, Jeremy from A Day to Remember just crushes me. It's like, you know, you know, there's like plenty of guys that have you know. Done it and surpassed, but it's true, like, there weren't a lot at the time.
I think you and Buddy are the only two I could think of.
Yeah, Buddy too. Yeah.
Yeah. That's, I'm sure there was a few others, but yeah, I love that. You know, I saw you guys both on tour together. I was like, this is sick. Just two only singer screamer
friends. I remember that tour very well, like 04.
It was a long time ago.
Very long time ago. That's no, man, that's cool. Yeah, like, it just always blows my mind on this podcast how many people, like, say, I'm not really a lead singer. Like, no, I'm just a guitar player, and I just sort of fell into this.
Just go up there and hope it works, man. Like, I've never claimed to even be a singer. I just do it because that's what happened. So hopefully people aren't like, this motherfucker thinks he's a singer. Like, no, I don't at all.
Yeah.
Just try.
That's right. I mean, hey, that's all we can do is try and hope it works out. So you guys have a new record you're working on right now?
Yeah.
Are you trying to write on the road, or is the record already done, or?
What a great question. All the stuff that is set up over next to you, my little podcast mic and shit. I've been trying to write all the vocal stuff on the tour. That's just I just record into that microphone. Just
it's
easiest
cute.
Thing.
It's very cute.
All the music's recorded and tracked, and now I'm just trying to finish up the vocals. So after the tour's over, I just go in and record it all.
So the record is written. You just have to record it.
That is
cool.
Yeah. Well, lyrically, not so much, but all the music's recorded and all good. So yeah.
Great. Yeah. And I know you have a label change.
Yes.
I know you did. I guess you've done three records with Fearless, and now you're moving on from them. And it's Roadrunner Records, is that correct?
Yep.
So how did that change come about, and I guess why?
Well, I mean, we signed a deal for three records with Fearless early on, and, you know, we were open to whoever for the next cycle, or you know, whenever our contract is up with Fearless, we were just like, okay, well, we know what it is that we're hoping for. The major concern with us was we wanted to find a label, whether it could have been Fearless. We definitely did not write them off like, oh God, we can't wait to get away from them. It was like, yep, whoever comes along that wants to work with us and work with what we're expecting from a label at this point of our career. And you know, the first and foremost thing, like we do with everything, is we want to work with people that understand the band, that get the band and are passionate about the band, rather than just signing us because we're, you know, cash flow.
Because you
sold
this many fucking records, exactly, on the last one, and they think you'll do it again.
Exactly. Yeah. Like we would have, like, let's say something as awesome as like a major like Universal came our way or was offering us all this money versus Fearless again being like, listen, we really understand the band now. We really think that I would much rather go with Fearless because I want to work with people that aren't just going to treat the band like some fucking dollar sign.
Yeah.
And throw money at us to try to get us to give everything that we have to them. So Roadrunner kind of came about, and they were the label. It was them, and I have to say, shout out to Brett from Epitaph. Both of those labels were very, very straightforward in showing interest in us.
Yeah.
And it was one of the hardest decisions we've ever had to make, because I back everything that Brett does, and I think Epitaph is an insanely strong, great label. I love Roadrunner. You know, we did make the decision that it was time to move on from Fearless and just try a new path for the band. And Roadrunner just seemed to be the ones that really put forth the best offer, so to speak, in what we were looking for. You know, they have a really great international presence, which is something that we have not really even scratched the surface internationally, or barely, and we really like Roadrunner's presence there, so that was a big thing. And just the fact that we got to know the guys over time, and I really love all the people that work there, and they've been really cool to wanting to just be not control what we do. They were just, we like you for what you're doing, and that's why we want to sign you. And that was like, yes, like,
right,
yeah.
Because you always hear about the horror stories of, you know, I don't know if Roadrunner is a major label. I guess they kind of are.
Yeah,
like,
it's an interesting gray area. But
they're an indie label, kind of, but they're basically all major label owned and distributed for sure.
Yes,
I mean Fearless is, everyone's distributed by a major label, but like, so it is a weird gray area. But you do, my fear if I was you would be like, the last thing I want to do is I record these songs, I rate these songs, and I give it to them, and they say, you gotta change this. That is like the number one scary, scary thing about like major, like you talk about an indie versus a major.
Oh yeah.
And like for our band, we don't even send our labels like fucking demos. Like, this is the record, here you go, put it out, and that's it. And that's the way our band would always operate. So if we had to operate in a different way where we're working back and forth with the label, that would be really, really hard for me.
It's stressful. Fearless was really cool with that. They would, even with our first record, they were just, you could see that they were stressed out and like, well, what's going to happen? This is their first record. And I was just like, just wait, I'll deliver the record and trust me. And I did. And I think that was a great, great thing that they allowed us to just do what we wanted to do for all three records. And that was amazing. It was such a weight off of our back to not have anybody breathing down our neck about like, well, what's happening in the studio. With Roadrunner, we are definitely a little bit more hands-on, but fortunately they're not trying to squeeze out the creativity. I mean, with Roadrunner, they even did something I was blown away with that they were cool doing this. I chose that I wanted to release a heavier song for Warped Tour off the new record, or just a new song in general. And I thought, okay, well, Roadrunner is going to want the bigger single, like the more radio-esque type of track, not a song that's just like super fast and super heavy and a little bit more of a throwback track to like the older metal roots of the band. And I proposed my idea, and they were like, yeah, sounds great. I was like, that's it? Like, you guys understand and get the point I'm trying to make? Like, it's a great track to release for Warped Tour. It's the band's 10-year anniversary. We really want to commemorize that this year, since the record's not going to come out till 2017. Like, I really want to put this song out this year.
Yeah.
And they were totally on board with it. And I was like, this is such a great start to what I hope is a great relationship with them. And that's, it like solidified proving that we went with, you know, with
right.
the great label. So, yeah. Sorry to talk
so
to you.
Far,
I'm,
so
I'm just going. Sorry.
What do you mean? This is a podcast. The whole point is that you talk and that you talk a lot, and we talk for a long period of time so that no detail falls by the wayside, right? This is why people listen. I've literally had people complain that podcasts were too short. I was like,
really?
Dude, it's an hour and 10 minutes. How is it too short? You know? Yeah, like, it's funny because that's the whole point. It's like, you go off and you talk and you tell stories that you never told before because you have time to do it. So, that's awesome. I'm so glad to hear that Roadrunner is being cool, and hopefully, like, this time next year, you still feel that way.
Yeah.
Because you know how labels can be, you know? So do you know when the record's coming out?
We're shooting. I got burned by saying that we're shooting for another time. We were supposed to put it out this fall, but because of all these all the new transitions between the label and just scheduling didn't work out the exact way that we wanted it to. So we ended up pushing it till hopefully January of 2017. I really don't see
it's a good
why,
time to put it on a record.
Yeah, just start the year off the right way. Finish this year off on the last. Like on the transition cycle between our last record and the new one, and do whatever we're gonna do for the rest of the year. So
the other thing now is like vinyl takes so long to press that it's like it's like 4 months now.
Yeah,
like it's crazy. Like because vinyl, you know, is selling more than ever, which is pretty good. So you have a new song out. So basically, you put it out for Warped Tour.
Yes,
so you're playing it on the tour.
Yep.
I gotta ask you. Being on Warped Tour, which we're jumping around a little bit, but being on Warped Tour in the heat every day, you know, you guys are kind of known for your image, which is important to your fans, important to you guys.
Yes.
Way to express yourself. I totally get it. But it's got to be a fucking drag when it's Phoenix and you're like, really? I have to put on this makeup and I have to wear whatever I'm wearing and get up there? Like, aren't there days that you're just like, please just give me board shorts and a Tampa Bay Lightning tank top.
Just
please
paint it on me so I don't have to wear a shirt. yeah, there are definitely days, man, where we wake up and like, fortunately,
like you're on first. You know?
Those are the days where it's just like you're a slug, just trying to get to stage that when it's that early. We just accepted that, you know, this is the path that we chose to take, and we want to continue to stay true to that and not, we don't want to be one of those bands that looks one way in photos and shows up and is wearing something completely different on stage. Like, we really try to make sure that everything about our band has a continuity to it, and we just do what we feel we are. And I feel like any answer I can give to that does sound like, yeah, we get it, dude. You're staying true to what you are. Like, we really do. Like, we really don't want to let down fans by going out there and showing that, like, oh, well, it's Warped Tour, so they don't care anymore. Or, oh, I really like this band because they, you know, they look a certain way, but they showed up and they're wearing, they're super dressed down and they just look like shit. Like, that's just not who we are. We try to really put our heart into everything. And had this been 2012 or 2014, where you were interviewing or where we were doing the podcast, there were some moments on that tour, man, where it was rough. Like, we woke up and putting makeup on every day was just like, by the end of the tour, we were just like, I can't wait for this tour to be over.
Yeah.
This tour, it's totally different. We're so in it now that it's not even a thought. Like, there are the days where you're just like, fuck, I'm going to put sunglasses on. But I still put, at some point, some makeup on, and I only wear my sunglasses because I like looking at the crowd, and there's days where the sun is in your face, like, blinding you. So I'll still wear makeup under that just to fucking do it. Just be like, yeah, I still did it, and I showed up, and I fulfilled, like, my passion for completing what we are every day.
So that's a good way to put it. That's a very good answer, and it makes sense. Now, I'm not, like, obviously, like, fuck. I was talking to Ashley Costello about this. It's like, there's literally times when I'll be, like, at a fucking bar, and I, like, look at my phone and be like, oh, shit, I have to be on in 10 minutes. And I just go, like, with whatever I'm wearing. And, you know, that's just the way I've always done it. And like, for Silverstein, the only thing we ever talked about in terms of, like, a wardrobe or an image or anything was when we first started, we weren't allowed to wear shirts of the band Grade because we thought we sounded too much like them and we didn't want people to say we ripped them off. So that was the only conversation we ever had. Like, I remember we our one guitar player when we played our first show was like, "So, like, what are you guys like wearing?" And we're like, "I don't know." And he's like, "Okay," and that was it. And that, like, that's it.
So, good talk, guys.
So my question to you is like, you start a band, you're doing it, you have an idea of like what your sound is because you're playing it, like, and everyone's hearing the sound, and it's like, okay, it's heavy or it's punk rock or whatever. So that doesn't even really need to be talked about, but like, the in terms of an image or all that stuff, like, for you guys, how did that start, and how did that progress, and like, and how much of that on an ongoing basis is that like affect, you know, what your relationship with each other is, and like everything, like how much of that is kind of the percent of the band focus?
You brought up earlier about this is like the time to really talk about shit that you don't really get to talk about with other people.
Yeah,
this is a very interesting question because I can't remember a time where I've really gone super in depth answering this question, and I have a lot of personal aggression towards it.
Oh, really?
So maybe we can. Maybe you're going to get some stuff that I've never said before in the sense that me complaining about stuff regarding my own band, which is rare.
I mean, sure.
Let's just say for anyone listening to this, if you go to Google and you search Motionless and White, you'll find a photo that I wish was banished from all existence where I'm in all black, I look like Davey Havoc, and everyone around me looks like they're in Under Oath. Every single one of the other guys in the band look like they're in Under Oath. And I've always, you know, I definitely not all the time look like that, but,
yeah,
you know, we were younger and we were figuring out who are, at that point, we were like early 20s or some of us were like 17, 18 years old. So we're still very much like anyone in the world figuring out who we were and what we were going to end up falling into for the remainder of our lives. And people still, even 30s and 40s, are still figuring themselves out and change. Not everybody, but clearly who you are can change at any moment. So I don't look back on those moments and think like we were, what's the term I'm looking for, like posers in any sense. Of like those are the bands that I loved. I loved AFI, Misfits, 18 Visions, etc. So I, as soon as I heard those bands and discovered what that was, or even back to Good Charlotte, those guys wore makeup and all black and everything.
Sure.
You not exactly the same style of music as the other bands, but I loved the bands like that. Those are the ones I always gravitated towards.
Right.
I was always super into stuff like, I was born in October, so I've always been super partial to like creepier shit and like Halloween and everything. So I think as soon as I saw bands that represented that type of like look and aesthetic, that's what I gravitated towards. Yep. The other guys, you know, back in the days where that photo was taken, and even some photos prior, I hated it. I was just like, this is fucking, like, I was just mad about it because I felt like we didn't look like a professional band. We just looked like two different bands combining to be one.
Right, like you wanted to look like a team, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we tried to not really focus on like, well, it's about the music and we're all together and we're doing this stuff together, and that's what really matters the most. So I didn't really care so much about the image, and if I felt like had I put more time in focusing on that, then I would have been a true poser by caring more about the image of the band than the music. So I didn't care. I was just like, you know what? Piss me off. Because I looked one way, we just didn't look like the same band.
Yeah.
But all the guys in the band were on board with the music, and that's what I cared about the most.
But then over time, obviously there's been a shift where either you said something, or they just sort of wised up to it, or someone else said something, or there was a conversation, which is, I guess, what I'm asking.
Exactly. There was, it kind of just slowly progressed, and the evolution of the music that the band was taking, I feel like one by one, like the only other person that really got on board with it early on was our drummer Angelo, our original drummer Angelo, and he's just came around. Like one by one, everyone came around to it. I was the oldest of all of them, so you chalk it up to the fact that I was just in a different part of my life, and they were finally coming around. I don't know what it was.
Yeah,
but at one point, one by one, each one of them started kind of coming on board and understanding that they liked all those same bands that I liked as well, but they just didn't look like that, and I wasn't pushing to say, like, you have to look like this. They just kind of did, and it's not like they didn't like it also. They just didn't look like it at the time, and finally it just got realized that we wanted to look like a professional band and look like, I shouldn't say like a professional band, like a hat. Like a hat.
I know what you're saying.
Yeah,
though.
Yeah. You know what, yeah. What I'm getting at.
You wanted
at.
To look like a put together like act. I totally get
it. Yeah, yeah. So
yeah,
it's always been a weird thing to touch on because we've never been about the image, and I think that those photos can prove that. That I didn't.
Yeah.
I wasn't like, yo, motherfuckers, like wear all black. You know, put makeup on. I just, it wasn't like that. It just happened, and I'm very happy that it, let's just say I'm very, very happy that it did. And then one by one, members from back then in that photo, I think there's only two guys that are in that photo I'm referring to that are in the band now. So a lot of the new guys that we got, there was no transition like that. They were already like that. They already liked the same bands and already looked like that, and they were interested in playing for our band. So it was that transition had happened back in the day, and now anything that happens in the future or right now is kind of just been, everybody's unanimously on board with that one aesthetic.
No, the band that I remember best kind of being that band in like, I guess in, you know, our scene was Aiden.
Yeah.
You
yep.
know?
Yep.
They were a bit, you know, like maybe our best friends like ever. And, you know, Will, who I had on my podcast, that's a good episode. People should go back and listen to that one.
I'm sure it's he's quite a bit to say.
Oh, yeah. So, but yeah, like basically that was like what it was with them, where they kind of started off and it was, you know, if you see the early photos of them, they kind of just look like a normal band. And then slowly, like it's the same members too, but they're a little, their clothes are a little more black, a little more makeup until like the last where it's like really shocking. So, yeah, I always kind of wondered how that happened, and I think you're right in that the more natural that progression is, the better, because that's you're right about that being a focus on the music,
not
on the image. Because any band that starts with an image is doomed.
Yeah, I think if that's
the advice you should give to kids.
Yeah, right.
when like, they ask you,
hey, we have a very strong image in our band, but don't care about that. No, it is what it is. I loved all those bands that the other guys in the band, in our band, looked like. Like, I loved Under Oath, and I loved Good Charlotte, and fucking Blink-182, and I love that Newfound Glory's on this tour. Like, I loved all that different stuff, but the look that I just went for was the one that that grabbed me the most, and that was like the whatever you want to call it, the goth look or whatever, you know. And or like even 18 Visions, they were always wearing makeup, but like fancy clothes and like
fashion core.
Yeah,
dude.
Exactly. So
I was just talking to Keith from ETID earlier today about fashion core, and that was like a big thing.
Yeah,
that you know was that was a big change in hardcore when that happened.
Rest in peace, 18 Visions.
Yeah, man. What a band.
Yeah, it's funny.
What
you guys,
James Hart's doing right now?
I don't know, but hopefully it's thinking about
that good-looking motherfucker.
Yeah, right. I think I feel like he just got married or something. I saw on the internet, but congratulations to him. Yeah.
Well, dude, I'm out of questions for you, I think. But what else? What else do you have to talk to me about? We could talk hockey if you want. Other sports. What else is going on in your life? What's new?
Well, we could talk more about you. I mean, maybe maybe you don't talk about you as much in these things, and people.
No,
hear
I talk about myself way too much.
Oh, do you? Okay.
Yeah. Every time, like you say something, I'm like, but my band too. We did. So
let's talk about looking back on past material and how we feel about those things, because that's stuff that I don't really ever get asked about. Do you?
That's a good.
I'm gonna interview you. How do you feel about earlier Silverstein stuff, like when Broken, is that like a record that you look back on and think, do you realize that some of those songs are like monumental songs in the development of what happened in the Warped Tour scene for bands that sing and scream?
No,
like,
I don't think about that, no.
Okay.
I'm proud of all our records, and I look back on all our records with a lot of love and fondness. They absolutely like are a snapshot of a lot of different periods of my life where different things were happening. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the thing about putting a record out every 2 years, and we're like clockwork since 2003. So you have this sort of progression of life, but also these snapshots with each record. So I like all of our records, and every record's special to me. But in terms of a song being like a monumental, like maybe you're talking about like Smashing to Pieces or Giving Up being like songs that your band covered, which is really funny. No, I don't think about it like that. I don't think about those songs being that, whether they are or not. I guess they are in some ways, but this reminds me of a conversation I had with Ryan, the guitar player for Poison the Well, and we were talking about, I was like, dude, you realize that you ruined metalcore. He's like, what? I was like, yeah, like Opposite of December, that record, man, like the shitty ripoffs of that record. He's like, no, man, you fucking ruined screamo. That's what happened, because everything after your band, you know, turned the genre upside down. So it's funny how when you're immersed in it, you know, you don't really realize. Know. But with your records, your first record, do you hate it?
We look back on those, and it's interesting because we like to look back and appreciate the history of the band. But the earlier like EPs and stuff, or I should say our first EP or like our first demo and stuff, it's weird because it's not necessarily the same band. We're in a position where we've been a band for 10 years and we're proud of that. So within that 10 years, we have to appreciate those EPs and stuff that we did back in those days. But it doesn't even necessarily seem like the same band anymore, because at that point it was a much different lineup. It was a much different mentality as a band. Like, it really is just the name that stuck. So that's why I asked, because, you know, you guys now compared to what you were then, being a band for that long, like, how, did you feel, that's what I was asking, like, did you feel like it was kind of a different band at one point?
No, I don't feel like it was a different band at all. It was, because it's the 4 out of 5 of the same members. I don't feel any different, Chris. Like, cool. I'm older, and I'm like, I guess I know more shit, and I've gone through more, and I'm a lot more confident as a songwriter, as a singer, a lot more confident. When we made our first record, we didn't know anything about the music industry, anything, like, no idea. So that's the thing. But I don't feel different in terms of like it being a different band. I just feel like that was the start. So, yeah, that is interesting, because you guys, like, your first full length was like 2010.
Yeah. Yep.
So for you guys to be a band, like, you had like a 4 or 5 year period where you didn't even put out a record.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, that first record is when I feel like the band necessarily started what it still is today. I mean, it's evolved from that point. But when I look back to our record Creatures, although there's some things about it that I'm like, oh my God, why did I write that? But
you mean like lyrically or vocally?
Yeah,
or?
Lyrically, just different things that are on there. I'm just like, oh my God, why? But I feel like that's Motionless and White.
Yeah.
The prior stuff to that, I look back and that's before everything kind of turned into what it is now. So I'm stuck in this weird gray area where we just wrote a song to celebrate the 10 years of the band, and those are a part of the 10 years.
Right.
But that earlier part also feels so distant from what we are now. I struggle with that. Like, I don't know how to feel about that stuff. So that's why.
Well, I think it's okay. I mean, every band is different. Like I was just talking to Keith, and he kind of said, like, you know, we're the only Every Time I Die.
Oh, yeah. That is very true.
And you are the only Motionless and White. Like, whatever you do is what you do. There's no predetermined path that you have to take or anything. So you took the path you took, and your early stuff is your early stuff, and maybe it's not as good. Maybe, you know, and some people might think it's better. It is what it is. But I have to ask you, when you were doing these 10-year anniversary shows, were you playing that early stuff?
We haven't actually done...
Oh, you're doing them?
We're going to try to do some actually at the end of this year.
Is that announced yet?
No.
Oh, cool. Hey, well, it's look at that. The exclusive.
Yeah, we're trying to do some like end of this year celebrate like 10-year anniversary. Yep. Even if it's just East Coast stuff, just to do some shows to end. I mean, obviously, you can only have one 10-year anniversary. We want to end the year off doing shows that celebrate that.
Sure, and then of course you have the new record, which will be coming out next year. So it makes sense before the new record comes out to kind of celebrate it and then move on to the next chapter.
There will be
decade of Motionless and White.
Exactly. There will be old songs played at those shows if they go down. So,
good. Well, I mean, that's the thing. It's almost kind of bullshit if you're going to do a 10-year anniversary tour and then not even celebrate the first 4 or 5 years of the band.
Yeah, it's always been weird. I would feel... I don't know if we'd go back, but there would be some, you know, at least from the first, we'd probably touch on stuff that we were proud of back in the day. Like we have a song called, we have a song called Destroying Everything, that was on our like EP that we put out with Tragic Hero Records. So there'd be songs like that, or like the song called Ghost in the Mirror. So maybe something earlier than that, but that's why, you know, it really just depends on what happens. I don't know if we're going to be able to pull off a whole 10-year anniversary tour. It sounds unlikely with what I know we have before that, before the end of this year. But even if it's just one show, we're gonna bring something back from back.
Yeah, I think I think that's awesome.
Yeah, we'll see.
It sounds like you guys have a lot of great stuff coming up. Good luck on recording the new record. Good luck with Roadrunner. And
thank you.
We're almost done Warped Tour. So
last week,
almost done. Last you ready week. To go home?
Honestly, this Warped Tour has been so awesome that I could do another couple weeks and not be upset about it. Yeah.
Wow.
I've had so much fun on this tour. I don't know if it's just, there have been some shows where people are just fried at the end of the night, but I've even had fun at those shows. Like, we played in St. Louis, and you could tell the crowd was just hammered by the heat.
Yeah.
And I didn't care. I wasn't like, well, the show sucks.
St. Louis is always a bad one.
Yeah, no, I felt bad because it was hot that day, but the crowd stuck around, and even shows like that where everyone's just drained was still super fun, and I don't know, man. I'm just really enjoying it.
You should start a petition. Just a joke. It would be funny, though. Put up in catering, put up a poster petition to extend Warped Tour.
I'll probably have
like a fake meeting, and then it would be, people would die laughing.
I'll receive death threats, I'm sure.
2 more weeks, Kevin. Come on, you can book something, right? Last minute.
Let's do all of Canada, too.
Well, it's good for you guys. You guys can go all the way home.
Yeah.
You know, you got to drive anyways, right?
Yep.
So. Well, perfect. Well, hey, Chris, again, thanks for doing this. So good to talk to you, and nice to meet you.
It's been great, Shane.
Yeah,
thank you.
We'll see you around.
If you told me when I was seeing you guys in the early 2000s that we'd be talking right now doing this, I'd be like,
on the back of
right.
your fucking tour bus?
It's pretty awesome. So
you'd be like,
thank
what?
You.
We have a bus? This is amazing.
Where? What? Yeah, thank you.
Thanks again, buddy. So I swear my friend Matt Steele said they went to high school together, but I must have just completely misunderstood. So sorry, Matt. I didn't mean to embarrass you. You're still my dude. Hey, thanks for listening to this one. I really enjoyed it. Thank you again to Chris for being on the show. Next week, we will be back with another episode, and this one is a doozy. I was going to put it out this week, but I'm giving it one more week. And, oh man, this is kind of my dream episode. So please make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss the one next week. Thank you so much for listening once again. As you know, if you've listened to this before, we always play music at the end of my podcast. So here is a brand new Motionless in White song they were playing on Warped Tour. It's about Scranton, where they're from. It's called 570. Here it is on Lead Singer Syndrome. Peace and love.